The show. It's the Carly Pilk Boys podcast. We're talking about the old Ricky Gervais XFM shows, obviously. I'm David Ferrier.
With Stephen Merchant.
We're both radio presenters in Australia. I've been a mad fan of these shows forever, listening to them again and again and again. This is Zach's first time listening through. We're doing it one by one. Today's show is Series 1, Episode 16, aka Balloon Carl, broadcast the 16th of March 2002. Zach, overall thoughts?
I enjoyed it. I feel a lot of pressure. You know, I feel like I've just realized when you're doing your little opener, I don't think I have ever had anything interesting to say in this bit. You know, when you go overall thoughts, I'm like, I think every time I've been like, yeah, it was good. Like, we should do like a little compilation of all my critiques.
Right. Am I putting pressure on you?
No, you're not putting pressure on. I did have the thought when I started this record, when I started listening to this episode, I was like, I've got to have a think about my initial thoughts. And then I forgot about it until just then. But maybe I should write have a little think about, a little top line critique or something.
Well, I think my general idea for having an overall thought segment is so we can immediately talk about the highlights of the show before, other than waiting till we get to that point in the air check. But
all right, that's good. That's good to flesh that out a little bit. So,
let's have a
throw to me again. Because now that I know that's the context of what we're looking at.
All right, welcome to the Carly Pilk Boys podcast. We're talking about the old Ricky Gervais shows on XFM. Obviously, I'm David Ferrier.
Oh, no, well, we don't have to go all the way back to the start. We can just do, like, 5 seconds before the throw.
Do you want me to start again?
No.
Don't have to. Okay. Well, no. Well, we do radio.
Wait. Everyone, if we all listen really closely, can you hear that? Yeah, I think we can hear the wheels falling off. Just ask me my overall thoughts.
Carly Pilk Boys. No, okay, we're doing today's show is the Series 1, Episode 16, a.k.a. Balloon Carl. It was broadcast on the 16th of March, 2002. Zach Mander, your overall thoughts of this episode?
Carl Pilkington, he's going to the skies. The sky's the limit in this episode, isn't it, Dave?
Isn't it funny? They're talking about literally sending him into the sky while doing this show was metaphorically sending his career.
There we go. That's a perfectly executed initial thoughts, and I don't want you to edit a second of that.
Okay.
I want it to be in the final podcast exactly as clunky as it was.
Do you want to do it again for real this time then? And we'll remove all the commentary. No, I'm joking. You know, you said about like you feel like you haven't had anything interesting to say. My notes in front of me for overall thoughts, I've written good spirits, high moments.
If my overall thoughts probably are that it was great to hear, particularly Ricky, genuinely, there's times in radio, and this is why it's a fun job, because, you know, every job becomes a job, no matter how fun it is, but there are times in radio, and hopefully you're in fun shows where this happens more often than others, but where you are genuinely, it's the funnest thing you could be doing at that moment. And that's what it sounds like Ricky has in that moment. It's like, it's a sad day afternoon. Even earlier in the episode, Steve kind of makes some type of like, you know, self-deprecating joke about like, that he doesn't want to be there. But like by the end of it, when they're talking about strapping helium balloons to Carl Pilkington and sending him up into the clouds, like Ricky is having so much fun that you get the vibe that like, you know, he would be there regardless of anything else going on in his life.
I love it. It's infectious. Ricky's joy.
It is infectious.
Doing this show.
It is infectious.
And over when they first bring up you, like I was listening to it today earlier, you can track when the idea first comes up and he's like, hey, that's a really good idea. And then it gets under his skin and he becomes so hyperactive at the idea of it. His joy is infectious.
He says, he even says in the episode, I'm not going to think about anything else for the next week. He's like, I'll just be solely thinking about this. And it's great too. It's one of those great thoughts that we've all had. As soon as you've seen a helium balloon, everyone has wondered, how many of them would I need to lift me up? And just the idea that that's my probably my favorite, some of my favorite type of content is childhood ideas that can be realized on an adult scale. So it's like when you have the money, when you have the resources, you can go back to some of those things when you're a kid and you can go, yeah, I'm going to try to execute that now that I have, because a lot of them, it's relatively not that expensive. You know, a few hundred dollars, you could probably get a few thousand balloons.
What would you do if you could achieve one of your childhood dreams? Mine would be have a bedroom with a trampoline floor. I feel like that is good. Still out of reach.
No, you can do that, man. Dream big. Like, if you owned your house, you could certainly do that. Like, what would it do to the real estate value? Send it through the roof, obviously. Like your head going through the ceiling.
That's... I used to always... I did it repeatedly all through my childhood. First thing I would always do, I don't know if you did the same thing, I would always practice my signature. Don't know why.
Yeah.
Me and my friends, we would always do that. Like, what's your signature going to be? And we would design our perfect bedroom. And mine always had trampoline floor.
And is there furniture on top of the trampoline floor?
Yeah, there's a big bed. Sometimes the bed was on a platform halfway up.
Yeah, you'd have to do that.
Yeah, that you could, like, when you wanted to get up in the morning, you could then just jump off. So
yeah,
that would be fun. Sometimes there was also a foam pit and then, like, a water slide to, like, leave. I still think it's a good design.
When I was 18, I moved out of home with four other guys. We were all 18. And we lived in my friend's dad's house. So we had a landlord, but it was one of the person's dads. So it wasn't really... even to this day, I'm not sure of how legal it was. Like, he would just come around and collect rent. I think it was a little bit dodgy. But, like, they were apprentice, you know, tradespeople. And so there was a couple of carpenters, you know, a mechanic and stuff like that. And one of the carpenters made a loft in his room without consulting the owner of the house. He, like, bolted, like, from wall to wall. Like, he put this, like, kind of like a sleeper, and then he put a platform, and his bed was up there, and he put a ladder to go up to it. And so we were 18, and it was like an instant kind of version of what you're talking about. Just like, he had learned these skills, he came home, he's like, I'm building a loft in my bedroom. And then thankfully, unbelievably, the landlord or the other guy's dad came home and he's like, yeah, that's cool, that can stay. Like, he's like, that's pretty cool.
So, like, this wasn't one of those, like, queen size bunk beds that you can get at IKEA that it just, like, puts a...
Similar, think about that.
Bed, but he built it and drilled it into the wall.
Drilled it into the wall, yeah.
And made it a permanent fixture.
Yeah, it was a permanent thing, yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And...
I would still like that.
Yeah, it's pretty... Like, and what you need to go on, man, is go on, like, start looking at how people make their, like... Have you seen... It's not quite a trampoline, but I have seen online, like, a cargo net. You know, loft.
Yeah.
You seen those?
Yeah.
Yeah, you could do something like that.
I've seen a couple of those in tiny houses where they make use of the sort of negative space because they're usually quite tall. It's just a net, like having a hammock across the middle of your room.
But look how much fun we're having just, you know, retelling those childhood dreams. You know, see, it's a rich source to play from, isn't
it? Yes, definitely. And you've seen Idiot Abroad 3. With Warwick Davis, right?
Yeah.
Where they finally...
I was thinking that the whole time.
I can't believe that's... I mentioned this at the end of last episode, that a lot of plots that are set up in this XFM show and the podcast are paid off in Idiot Abroad and Moaning of Life. Things like he goes back to the caravan park and the balloons thing. He gets his prostate checked. Like, it really is the perfect sort of, like, tying of the bow on all of these plots that are set up, all the tabs that are opened.
Yeah. And isn't that interesting? Because this is in the first few months.
Yeah.
Like, I know we're 16 episodes in or whatever, and you think, like, oh, well, but really, they met each other a few months ago. And then the last thing they do together is the Moaning of Life altogether, isn't it?
I think only series 2 of Idiot Abroad was the last thing they did. I don't think Steve was involved in Idiot Abroad 3 with Warwick Davis.
Oh, okay. But what I mean is, like, you know, that's it really puts the, you know, it's a framing of the whole relationship. It also goes to show a thought I've had a few times is just because ideas come up early on doesn't mean they're bad. And, like, if you have a good idea early on, it doesn't matter how long it takes to execute it. Like, just keep your good ideas. Mm. What do you think about that?
I agree with that. Yeah. I think that's what's great about
it. I have an analogy. Do you want to hear my analogy? Because you'll understand it because it's about surfing. Now, when you paddle out on a break to go surfing, right? You don't really know what the waves are like. Like, you can see them from the shore, so you have some sort of assessment. But you paddle out there, you're excited, and a couple of waves come in, and you just jump on the first waves that come. And you're having a great time. You catch 10 waves in the first 20, 30 minutes. But then you've had a few waves, and you're like, oh, I'm going to wait now for the big set waves, because I don't want to keep catching those little ones. I'm warmed up now. But what inevitably happens is then you sit out the back for the next half an hour waiting for the big set waves and they never come. Or maybe they come and someone else gets it. Or maybe you fall off. Or maybe you get one in half an hour. But what I've been trying to do is I'm like, I try to keep the energy from that first 10 minutes. And I'm like, yeah, just go get the ones that you were happy with at the start. At some point during that surfing session, your expectation went up. And I think of this with ideas. I'm like, at the start, when you first start making things, you make everything. And you just make every idea that you have. And then, you know, you start to get a bit of success, or someone pays you to do some of it, or you get a job or whatever. And then all of a sudden, it's not fun anymore, or you're waiting for the big idea. And it's kind of like the waves. I kind of think in now, like, so for example, when I was a couple of years ago, when we're doing the end of our show, like, I turned down, like a lot of waves. I turned down, like, a lot of opportunities because I was like, no, I'm not doing that stuff anymore. But I think back on it now and I'm like, I would have had a lot of fun. It would have opened up a lot of doors and I would have made a lot more diverse stuff if I just was saying yes to those smaller opportunities when they came to me. And so, I don't know if you relate to that at all, but that's how I look at it. And I see it now with Ricky Gervais, and they're like, at the moment, they're not judging these ideas. They're just like, yeah, we're going to do the balloon idea. And then in 3, 4, 5, it might be 10 years later, after they've made movies, after they've done TV shows. So, like, that bar has got higher and higher, but they still go back to the idea they had at the very start.
Yeah. I'm surprised that they remembered it, frankly, all those years later, that this thing that came up on a radio show, because they must have talked about it then. That's what that says to me, is that it must have been a topic that popped up every now and then, that when it came to that moment, they went, oh, let's actually remember that thing. Let's do it.
I see it with people, like, let's use Ricky Gervais as an example. Like, you see it with people's careers in, like, Hollywood and stuff like that. It's like they get a break like The Office, and at the start, you know, it's kind of like your first album. Like, that's the big project you do. And then, but you're not looking in those areas again because you get new opportunities. So then you're looking at movies, and then, you know, the movies aren't as good or they take longer. And it's like, no one hangs around in the middle long enough, in my opinion, just doing the stuff, just working all the time, making new things. And so that's how I'm looking at it. Does that surfing make any sense to you? Do you relate to that at all?
Yeah, it does.
I'll summarize it. This is how I'll summarize it to make sense. It's like, you don't always, just because you do a project, don't always look at, okay, so now I've done that thing, I need to do a bigger thing. That's how I'd summarize it. So it's like, so you just do, like, the project that you had fun doing at the level that you did, do 20 or 30 of those. Like,
sure,
stay there doing those for a while. You don't always have to be going up and up and up, because you might not be good at the next thing. That's the other thing. If you find something you're good at... Do the thing
you can enjoy the level you're on instead of constantly looking up the ladder.
Yeah, that's probably what I mean.
Or I think something that happened with Ricky Gervais is he kept going up and up and up and up. And then what made a couple of movies, everyone went, these aren't that good. So he's come back down to his sweet spot, which is TV shows.
That's true. They weren't, the movies aren't horrible, but they're not great, are they?
Oh, I can't really think. Like, I enjoy Ghost Town. That's fine. But he was just an actor in that. He had nothing to do with the script. I think Cemetery Junction, which was their big movie that they made together after Office and Extras, is a bit of a dud. Invention of Lying, it's terrible. Foreign Correspondence is one of the worst movies I've ever seen. Here we are again. I'm bad-mouthing Ricky Gervais. Let's get on to the emails. CarlyPilkboysPod@gmail.com had a follow-up from Glenn, the listener in Canada, in Newfoundland. I replied to his email and I said, oh, well, what I know about Newfoundland is from the musical Come From Away. Do you know the musical Come From Away?
No.
So on 9/11, all planes on the 9/11, all planes were diverted to this tiny town in Newfoundland, which used to be a major hub because planes coming from Europe before jet airliners, they couldn't make it the whole way, so they had to stop halfway. So this little remote town had one of the biggest airports because everyone used to have to refuel. It's the first place in North America that the Beatles landed. But since jet airliners were introduced many, many years ago, it's become irrelevant. So it's a town of like 7,000 people. On 9/11, all planes were diverted there. So overnight, their population doubled. And it's all these people who have no idea what's going on. No one had any idea what was going on. Everyone's terrified and confused. And this town had to all rally together to help house and feed and comfort all these people. It's a really, really lovely story, like just humanity at its best. And it's a great fun. They've turned it into a great fun musical of all things called Come From Away. And I saw it when it was in Brisbane just recently. So I emailed him back and I was like, oh, you know, I know Come From Away, but he told me where he was from. And I was like, I see it's, you know, about 3 hours away from where you are. And he got back to me saying he was there. He lived in the town of Gander when 9/11 happened, and he was part of that effort to take care of all those displaced people, feeding them and clothing them. So that blew my mind, frankly, that someone who's listening to this podcast and who's a fan of the old Ricky Gervais shows was a part of a pretty historic moment like that. So, Glenn, thank you again for getting in touch. Really appreciate it, and what a champion. Also had a follow-up from Briggsy about the thing about Ricky saying that elephants like buns. He's written, Hi, Carly Pilk Boys. I do remember that there was a TV series called Nelly the Elephant, which was broadcast in the UK in the early 90s, in which the protagonist, the aforementioned Nelly, bloody loved a currant bun. In fact, I think Nelly's love of buns was often quite central to the plot. I couldn't be absolutely certain that this is the true genesis of elephants eating buns, of the elephant eating buns mythology, but it's certainly a possibility. And yeah, in the UK, we do just assume elephants love a tasty bun. Hope that clears it up. Best regards. Briggsy, lead UK culture correspondent.
Isn't there some, isn't there like a kid's nursery song about Nelly the elephant?
Well, if it's the same one that I'm thinking of, it's what they use as the intro music. The Nelly the elephant packed a trunk and went to... live in the jungle or something like
that. Right, yeah, I'm vaguely remembering that.
Yeah.
No, there you go.
I was getting Nelly and Baba confused at one point. Two childhood, two elephants that entertained children, two animated elephants from the 90s.
There was a real genre for a while.
It was the real salad days for cartoon elephants, the early 90s. Anyway, thanks for those emails. Keep them coming. CarlyPilkboysPod@gmail.com. Let's get on to the air check. Series 1, episode 16. Strong first break. I love this first break. I don't know anything about the Wurzels or Tom O'Connor, but I love hearing their anecdotes about going to award shows.
Okay.
How did you find it listening to it for the first time?
I thought there was an interest in celebrity that I don't have, that they seem to have, or it's like, I know that they're, the idea of award shows and celebrities, it's lost on me.
Did you find it interesting at all?
Like I was entertained by the story, but I wasn't particularly, you know, I liked what struck me as interesting is the way that the guy said, like, and we've got some celebrities in tonight. I'm like, what's a celebrity? Like, you know, what's the definition? So what, they had some celebrities and some not celebrities. I don't know. I don't like, you know, I was talking to you just off air before about awards, and then, you know, I don't know if you've ever entered radio awards or not, but like, I just hate that whole thing. I don't like the... some people like dressing up and doing the thing, and they're like, oh, that justifies doing the awards. The awards don't really matter. It's about coming together. Nah, don't like any of it.
Okay, I feel like people fall in one camp or the other. They either love awards or hate them. And you and Marto, who I used to work on The Breakfast Show, he's been on a breakfast radio show for is his 21st year. And he said, I've never been to an awards ceremony. I consider myself not a part of this industry. I am an outsider. And my award is longevity. I've been doing this job for 20 years. I, on the other hand, am a sucker for awards nights. I love it. I love coming together and being in a room with other people who do the same thing I do. And I'm a fan of radio. So I like seeing and meeting and saying hello to people I like who do a similar job to me. I'm not a cynic about it at all. I really enjoy it.
That's great.
I still enjoy the novelty of like things with an open bar.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't have to pay for the drinks. That's cool.
Yeah, that's fun. I like the idea of getting... I like the idea of freebies. I like the idea of... Well, it's not really a free dinner, is it? Often, you know, the company has to pay for you to go or something like that. Well, I guess it's free to you. I like that. I don't know. Just...
Have you ever been to an ACRAS? That's what the radio awards are called in Australia. I think you should do it just once, even for the novelty. You might hate it because it does go forever. That is one thing I will... They do go for a long time because every award, which there are many, has the award for the metros, for the capital cities, the award for the regions, and the awards for the provincials, which I don't really understand the difference. So they power through them.
The big film awards, I guess I'm kind of interested in those. Like I won't watch it or anything, but I'll look up who won the Oscar, you know, for best picture and stuff like that. I'll follow that news. But like, I just think it's like, it's self-evident what's good and what's not. You know, if you make good radio, people talk about it. People know about it because you're broadcasting it. We're not discovering it. At the awards night, you're not bringing it to everyone's attention. Well, you shouldn't be. And if you are, it probably wasn't that good because it's an ecosystem that works, that when something's good, it spreads. And if it doesn't, then it probably wasn't that good, unfortunately. And I have had to come to that realization many times myself of like, oh, if just some people could discover it. No, it's not that good. You have to do better next time. And so I don't... Like, I kind of think in those... I've got my award already. You know, we've shared it. People enjoyed it. Or some people didn't, maybe. Or, like, we heard from someone. That's the award. Like, I don't know why I need to hear from other people who, most of them, I don't value their opinion. Why I have to hear whether or not they thought it was good.
You've got a strong sense of integrity, and I really do respect that. But I'll quote Stephen Fry in Extras.
Yeah.
Nice to be recognized by one's peers. That's what I would say. And you said, if it's good, it spreads. Sure, for comedy content, let's agree on that. But there's a lot of bad things that spread.
Yeah.
And that just because it spreads doesn't mean it's good.
Yeah. I'm talking in a content.
Yes.
Don't take me out of context here in the
sense
of illnesses.
Are you talking about Trumpism? Are we talking about COVID-19?
No. No, I mean in the sense of like, you know, making things that people like or are involved, you know, content, I guess, or telling stories or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess
I'm
probably...
The Fast and the Furious franchise.
I probably, if I'm looking on my, like internalizing it a little bit, I probably have like a little bit of like a... Well, I'm just going to do this myself, guys, if you're not going to let me in your club. Probably at some stage in my development, it was like, all right, you guys aren't letting me in the cool group, so I'm going to go do this thing by myself. And maybe that's left over, you know, 20 years later, 15 years later. So. I'm like, I don't want to be a part of your club.
I think so. And I think that's really cool. Like, I'm not being ironic or anything. I think that is genuinely, because that requires a lot of... like true sort of belief in yourself, where I reckon I am like insecure and like, hey, what do you need me to do? I'll do it for you. So you need me to dance like this. because I just have this deep doubt. I'm not courageous enough to be like, well, fuck everyone. I'll do it my way. Because I'm like, well, I suck. So tell me what I should do. That's a massive oversimplification, but that's sort of the core of it.
Oh, don't worry. I think I suck. I just think we all suck. So, I just think we're all not great at it. And just sometimes people stick out a little bit. Sometimes you get lucky.
That seems like a very, very healthy mantra. I think I suck, but we all suck. So, why would I do it any other way? I just want to point out Tom O'Connor, who is the subject of this story in the first break, at the TRIC Awards, the TRIC Awards, which are still going. Some interesting, interesting award categories. Soap of the Year is the first one that comes up. It is still running, the TRIC Awards. Soap Actor of the Year, and so on and so forth. So Radio Personality, TV Podcast of the Year, we should submit.
Yeah, let's do it.
We should submit for a TRIC Award.
It's probably like $1,000 to enter.
Yeah, I know.
If it's not, let's do it, because that would be a good full circle for the show.
That would be funny. Yeah, and that it stood out to me that they mentioned that they didn't win. The Office did not win. It was beaten by a show called... Hang on, I wrote it down. No, I didn't.
That's what I mean, though. This is what I mean. That's probably highlights my opinion about
Linda Green.
Sorry, that highlights
the show was called Linda Green.
My opinion about awards shows. In the radio world, I've seen shows win that were coming last in the ratings, and they've won best show. And by all means, I think that things aren't, you know, it doesn't have to be enjoyed by everyone to be a good thing. But when it comes to broadcast radio, it kind of does. Like, if it's the least listened to show, how can it be the best show? And so, yeah, I have no trust in the system. And here's an example. This show, The Office, is going to go down as one of the greatest shows ever created. And that year, it didn't win the best sitcom or whatever. What a joke.
Yeah. I love hearing in these early runs, because it's award season, they're going to things, and you hear about like that they lost to One Foot in the Grave in that other one. This time they've lost to this show called Lindsay Green. I'm with you, but I just go, well, look, it's such a subjective thing, comedy and art, and some people, their tastes, age, or their choices on the committee that would have been choosing these awards, they chose poorly. They just they got it wrong this time. But Linda Green, the show, went for two seasons, had some good guest appearances from, speaking of The Office, had an appearance from Martin Freeman. Simon Pegg was in an episode, and it was created by the guy who went on to make Shameless, which is an outstanding show. And Tom O'Connor, final thing on this first break. If you get a chance, go to tomoconnor.co.uk, because I think Tom O'Connor has passed away. He is dead. I think this website was made probably in 2002, and it has not been updated.
Tomoconnor.what?
.co.uk. It's a website which I remember from early days of the internet. There's a tab down the bottom for a photo album that causes an automatic download, so you can look at a photo gallery of Tom. Steve on the show reads out the thing from the pamphlet at the award ceremony about Tom O'Connor, and on his about page about Tom, I'm pretty sure it's the exact same copy or thereabouts.
So listen to this. You think that Steve's reading from this exact webpage on the show?
No, I think they used the same copy, like the same sort of... His same bio hasn't changed from then to whenever this website was made. So that's why I'm predicting it was made around the same time.
Yep.
Partly because of how it looks. There's no reference to his death. It says, Tom O'Connor on the About Me, About Tom page today. Tom remains very much in demand today, either as a star performer at some of the country's leading cabaret venues or a much sought-after compere and master of ceremonies. He has recently appeared on some of our best-loved television programs like Pointless, The Hairy Bikers, Loose Women, Charity Cash, in the attic, and of course his winning stint on Come Dine With Me. Okay, so I hadn't pre-read that. That is obviously a bit more updated with references to shows like Pointless. In addition to his tenure as one of the most sought-after entertainers on the cruise circuit, cruise ship comedian, Tom continues to make guest television appearances on shows like John Bishop's Only Joking on Sky TV. Watch this space for updates. Sadly, there will be no more updates. Rest in peace, Tom O'Connor. Sincerely, the Carly Pilk Boys.
Has there been enough time? This isn't a fresh thing, is it?
No. He died a few years ago, I think.
And it looks like probably lived a full life too.
Oh, yeah. Published author, host the Trick Awards. I mean, he did it all. Said grace. Whoops. He only...
Oh, no.
I thought he only died 2 months ago.
Oh, my goodness.
I'd like to.
I thought you were going a little hard, and I was like, oh, man, I hope he's looked into this.
I'd like to apologize to the estate of Tom O'Connor, his wife, Patricia Finn, who he married in Finnan in 1962, and his four children. Too soon. I acknowledge, too soon. I don't think I was really saying anything bad.
No.
I was just laughing. Okay, let's move on to break two. They mention the hit list thing. That's what Carl's homework was this week. And they bring up the legendary story that Hitler only had one ball.
And there's a great line, I think, around this time where they're asking for sound effects. And Carl, which he always delivers his best lines when he's actually a little bit flustered. Like when he's actually genuinely a little bit annoyed. And he says, well, you know, that would be my job, but you guys have got me looking up about reading about Hitler. And he's really kind of annoyed about it. It's really funny.
Great line. So they talk about the Hitler's testicle thing. And this is a world before Google. But since this is 2021, I looked it up. Hitler's doctor, Erwin Geising, and his personal physician, Theodor Morell, disregarded the idea of Hitler's monochrism and said there was nothing wrong with Hitler's testicles.
So it's a bit of propaganda, is it?
It certainly seems to be. It's an interesting choice, interesting line to go for. I suppose it's emasculating for someone who paraded himself around. Like,
yeah, well, isn't there kind of a bit of a history of, not that exactly, but, you know, the things that men find, disproportionate pride in, so like height, for example, but done the opposite way. Don't sometimes they over-report how tall some of these leaders were to make them seem like that they were more scary or a better leader
more imposing
or maybe more charismatic?
Well, certainly with Napoleon. There's one of his most famous paintings of him on a horse that's rearing, like pointing the way towards Russia. But he was like a genuine 4'5" or something. He was a tiny, tiny man.
I've heard, though, that wasn't uncommon. Like, that at the time, he wasn't like drastically shorter than everyone else.
Oh, yeah. No, that's fair enough. Yeah. I've been to parts of France where I could not fit through the archways of...
Yeah, that's right.
Is some barracks that were built 500-600 years ago. And even the house in London that where I stayed at, Family Friends, the house was older than had been built like 100 years before Australia was colonized. So that house has been around longer than Europeans had been in Australia. So there was a doorway that came to my chin.
Well, who would have thought that a diet of cheese, bread and alcohol wasn't the most conducive to, a healthy growth.
Yeah. Who knew that feeding kids beer for breakfast every day, because if they drank water, they'd get the plague and die, wouldn't necessarily result in being 6'3", like I am. Carl didn't win the lotto again. Shame.
How funny is his reaction to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, where Ricky says that's the exact same probability
yes.
As any other number. And Carl's just like, nah, Nah.
He struggles with those. Those and the concept of infinity really just refuses that it's a thing. Cannot wrap his head around it.
But I was thinking about that. It was an interesting tactic with Lotto, isn't it? Because although that might be just as probable, you also think that you want a unique number, don't you? Like, in the sense of a number no one else will pick. Because you don't want to share. If you win, you want to be the only ones who have those numbers.
Yes.
And I would think that 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, I'd think that that would be one that more people would go for than just a completely random set.
Do you think so?
I think so, yeah.
I think if 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, whatever, came up in Lotto, my immediate reaction would be, this is rigged. Because I'm with Carl, it's like, that seems like it could never happen.
It does. I understand that it seems like that, but that just goes to show how unlikely it is that your numbers will ever come up.
It is. Far more likely to be struck by lightning while being attacked by a shark. It's more likely that both of those things will happen at the same time than winning Lotto. Break three, day before St. Patrick's Day. I learned something from this show the first time I heard it. Did you learn something as well?
About the fact snakes. About
what St. Patrick's did?
I think I had heard that before.
One of the many useful... Oh, okay. I hadn't. One of the many, many useful things this show has enriched my life with.
But you listened to this, 10 years ago.
Yes. Yeah.
So I'm a much older person listening to it for the first time.
True.
So I probably have had more experiences than you had at the first time.
You've had more St. Patrick's days
than
I had at this stage. You'd had more conversations about the history of the legend of St. Patrick. You've had more history with snakes as well.
That's true. That's true.
I loved your TikTok, by the way, showing the snake trying to flee, trying to just get on with its life, and that magpie relentlessly badgering it.
Living near the house. I was going to talk about this when Carl had his magpie. I forgot about it. To highlight how different they are, because Carl's magpie, until it left him, they seemed like they had a pretty good relationship. Our magpies are quite vicious, and I videoed it, this magpie's attacking this huge snake, like swooping it. But interestingly, the magpie, because what they do is they remember people, or at least they remember shapes. They've done studies on this. They remember shapes of people, and that's who they swoop. So people were unable to figure out for a while why some people get swooped and some people don't. But like, if someone aggravates a magpie, like throws a rock at it or something like that, or, tries to attack it or tries to take its eggs, it remembers that outline and it thinks that person's coming back when they see you. Now, this magpie in my street exclusively swoops very small children with big helmets on push bikes. I have seen it swoop kids of that description a dozen times in the last month. Honestly, because there's a bike path nearby and I'll hear screaming and I'll look out. Yep, another little kid with a big helmet getting swooped. Not one adult. And, there'd be hundreds of adults that go along this bike path every day. I go out there every day, doesn't touch me. But there's neighbors around who have young kids. I'm talking 3, 4, 5 when you first get those bikes that you put your legs down on. And then they have those massive helmets because their heads are like so disproportionate. Yeah, it must be that shape. There's something about that shape. Like sometime a kid has pissed off this magpie and it's trying to get its revenge.
Now it is profiled all adorable children on little bikes.
But like I'll be out the front of my house and I'll just hear, because what happens is because the parents are often with it. And it's like they're going on a military exercise. Like I hear the parent just like be like, stay close, stay close. Keep your head down.
I've been watching a bit of SAS Australia. Just made me think of that SAS Kids Edition.
Yeah, that's funny, man. You know how they do, like, there's a reality show in Australia. I think it's in the UK as well, the SAS.
Yeah, I think it originally was a UK show because all the SAS guys are British.
Yeah, they're all UK. The celebrities go through, like, intense army training. But you know how they do, like, MasterChef Kids or, like, The Voice Kids?
Yeah.
Imagine if they did SAS Kids.
Walk through this area. There is a magpie. It will attack you. Head down. Keep walking. Let's keep going. So break four, they go back to the chat about British TV. And I kind of covered off all the things that I wanted to say about that. Break five is White Van Carl. Again, another little nice snapshot of the time and place. And interesting to me that they talk about, oh, what do you think about the story? Britney Spears got dumped and they think she might be cracking up. It has been 20 years and we're still talking about the same thing.
Yeah,
in regards to Britney Spears. And that makes me think, like, no wonder she has such a hard time. No one will leave her alone for the past 20 years.
Yeah, I thought the exact same thing. It was remarkable. I'm enjoying that almost as much as the jokes. Just like this, like, it's like a, what are those time capsules, you know, that you put in the ground?
Yeah.
But it's like an audio time capsule. I'm like, oh, yeah, remember that? When everyone was talking about that, and especially because it was like, you know, I was like 12 years old or something. So all these things were kind of in my peripheral and I'm kind of, you know, I know a little bit about them. I was like, yeah, what was that thing about Britney Spears again? So it's just fascinating.
And that must be cool hearing it for the first time, because now you can go back and listen to it and think of like what your adult perspective on it is, which you couldn't have possibly had when you were a child. Yeah, it's an interesting sociological sort of time capsule.
Even in the way that they're dealing with social issues, like the idea of the journalists, you know, they mention in White Van Kyle, what does he think about journalists, you know, publicizing things about celebrities that they don't want to be out there but are true. So it's not defamation. You know, it's just interesting, the conversations we're having now, it has a very like digital spin on that, doesn't it? You know, about your privacy online and things like that. It's fascinating to hear what the concerns were 20 years ago and what the community was talking about.
Absolutely. Landmark moment at 26 minutes into this episode. Carl brings up his childhood girlfriend, Zoe Harris, and how much of a considerate boyfriend he was back then. Can't be dealing with it. Ripping her dress. He does tell this story again later down the track and adds more detail to it, including a jealous sort of love rival who gets involved. So maybe we should talk more about it when that happens, but I love that. I love the story. I love the way Carl tells it. I think it's so revealing to Carl's character. And I love Steve's reaction. He's so outraged that he could be so callous to a young woman. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. And it shows his kind of what he's looking for in life. You know, no nonsense, kind of no... he doesn't want to be dealing with... I think his accusation here is that there's an overreaction to the stimulus or to the issue. And I don't think he can relate to that. Which is, you know, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. I'm just saying Carl's not into it.
Yeah. And he mentions that he and his friends were playing Dead Arm that night. Did you? It was a classic schoolyard game, even in my part of the world growing up. And even worse was, I still have a scar on the back of my palm from a thing called the Wuss test when I was, I think, 9 years old. And it was, you scratch, use your nail on the back of your hand and scratch. And the worse the injury you can cause your hand, the better.
That's fine.
So I still have a scar from that.
So you're not a Wuss fan?
No, I want. That's the Wuss test.
That's good news.
Which is the most important thing.
Oh yeah, I hated all those. Remember, like, you'd flick coins at the knuckles. What was that called? I don't know, but it had to draw blood. Like you're trying.
Oh, the thing where you like pull someone. You hold your hands up with your palms out and someone pulls your middle fingers down either way and then smacks your wrists together. One of the most painful things in the world.
Yeah. Not into them. Never liked them. I assume the dead arm is just where you punch someone in the arm, is it?
Yeah. Yep.
Until so I was never particularly good at... I wasn't very strong, you know? So I never really like... never liked those games.
Yeah, Chinese burns. I don't know why they were called Chinese burns, and thinking back on it now. All that stuff. Kids are idiots. Kids are dumb. Break 6 was the Hitler recap. I don't really have anything to say about this. Again, just a good one. It is funny how you can hear Carl start to panic as the wheels come off.
Love it when he talks about how he starts to get annoyed with himself, and he said, "I knew it all this morning."
Yeah, yeah. And waking up and turning to his girlfriend, Suzanne. "Quick, ask me something about Hitler." That's just a funny line.
And when he goes, also his frustration that he has, his view of what Ricky's life is versus his, like, you know, he's like, "You have time to do silly things like this." He's like, "I've got a life to live." He's like, "I'm not just sitting around watching TV."
Yeah, but yeah.
But I'm sure Ricky's doing stuff.
He seems to be. Yeah, exactly. Like, Ricky's got a burgeoning, exploding comedy career, and he's doing stand-up, and he's got all these other things. As he points out a lot, they've got a million jobs. Carl's just got the one job.
I'm not saying Carl does this, whinging. But I do not like the idea, which I come across often, of, like, if you're having fun, it must mean that you have no work on. I'm like, you can have fun and be busy. Like, or you can be busy and not have to be, like, really grumpy all the time.
And yeah, that's interesting. That is, like, there's people with the mindset that unless you're miserable, you're not working.
Yeah. And so, you know, I'm like, no, have a bit of fun. Yeah. Who cares?
Break 7, they talk about the Hindenburg. And I've just written down get to know Carl segment, but I cannot remember what that's in reference to. So I apologize if that's something really interesting that we're just going to move past. Break 8, Carl in the balloon comes up. They clear up the helium-hydrogen mix-up, and they find out that it'll take 6,000 balloons to get Carl up in the air, and they get really excited about doing it. This, in a typical mainstream radio, this would be the first break of a story arc, a classic radio stunt. They even use the sentence, "Should we do it? Should we send Carl up in a balloon?" Which I have heard as a part of a real breakfast radio story arc. But it was, unlike this, it was completely planned and scripted out. It was scripted out, the part where it's like, "What, should we, like, do this thing then? Oh my God, would that be crazy?
131060, do you guys reckon we should? Give us a call." God.
Yeah, yeah. But there's been a whiteboard where it's like, okay, day one, Brett, you'll introduce it. Then we'll go to calls if we think it should be a good idea. And then we'll have someone call in. It'll be the mayor of the town who will go, "Guys, this is a crazy idea, but I'm signing off on it. I'll be there."
Now,
and then, you know, so all
now
all
the boss,
that.
Let's get the boss to say we can't do it. And then the boss will say, if we get 100 people on social media who click like on this post, we're going to be able to go forward with it.
Yeah. So, usually they're very controlled. And while I might think it's a little, it takes away any sort of magic or anything, excitement, knowing how the sausage is made, I get it. People want a bit more control over how these things go. But in this instance, it comes up organically. In this first time that they're talking about it, Ricky is like, "Yeah, no, we'll send you up 10 feet in the air." But then it rapidly falls off the rails. Ricky gets way overexcited. And then by break 9, he's completely lost his mind and he's trying to say he's got to go 100 feet up in the air. Carl at one point is really excited about it and he's actually laughing. But then he changes his tune when it seems like it's getting a bit out of hand.
There's a great line. What is this? Ricky retells it off air because the guy who calls up says, "Yeah, I'll give you the balloons if I can have a walk-on role on the office." And they're all worried about the legalities of exchange, making that exchange. And Carl pipes up and he says, "You're more effing worried about your TV show than strapping me to balloons and sending me into the sky."
This is an example of something that happens a few times in these run of radio shows, is where they get excited about an idea and then it's sort of just, I don't want to spoil it. No, I think you probably know. They don't end up doing it.
Well, I had assumed because they do it later.
Yeah. There are ideas for TV shows that come up later. Ricky loves the band The Darkness. And he pitches to Steve that he really wants to make like a Goodies style or the Monkees style sitcom for The Darkness. And he's genuinely excited about it. They talk about this like idea for a show called Is Art Rubbish that they were thinking of doing. And they say that Carl should host it. So I really get a kick out of hearing them spitballing ideas and going like, oh, they, you know, at that level, being who they are, what they've created in the office, there is still a bit of like, hey, should we do this maybe? Should we do this? It's not like we know exactly what the one thing is we should do next. There's a lot that's up for discussion. I don't know why, but I get something out of that.
Just seeing kind of how the idea develops and everyone kind of vibing on it.
Yeah, and that people, and like, these two guys just created The Office, but they still come up with off the cuff, like, other ideas which maybe aren't like as good. But, you know, that I don't know. It's hard to articulate. But
it's like when I first watched, you know, I grew up watching surfing videos, you know, like where people make films, surf films of like great surfing. And then the first time I watched a competition, I was like, oh, they don't make every wave. You know, when you're watching it live, you know, they started streaming competitions 10 to 15 years ago, and I was watching it and I'm like, oh, hang on, the world's best surfers fall off all the time. Like, is that kind of what you mean, where you're like, oh, we're seeing how they develop, but we're seeing how great ideas develop, but also ideas that don't make it through?
Yes, I think that's it. Well, seeing a bit a behind the scenes insight into the process instead of just seeing the finished product,
yeah,
and having the impression that that's all it ever is. So I like that. And they end on a quick recap and say goodbye into a song, a little bit more on the Carl Balloon stuff. They're certain that they want to do it. What we learned in this episode, The Office was beaten by the show Linda Green at the 2002 Trick Awards. Steve hates English people who get really excited about St. Patrick's Day. Imagine what it's like down here, Steve. A lot of Australian people with vague ties to Ireland going around being debauched. Although there are lots of genuine Irish people here. Carl's mates gave his name when they were caught stealing cars.
Oh, that was sad, wasn't it?
That's, again, one of those little sad insights.
Yeah, because Steve goes, and he never answers the question, but Steve goes, were these your friends? like, he's genuinely confused.
The answer is no, definitely not. And that Carl was a terrible boyfriend when he was 7 years old. No key phrases for me this week. Favorite bit? What was your favorite bit?
Just the whole, once the balloon gathers a bit of steam, and okay, they're getting really excited about it. But particularly when Carl, you know, while Ricky recounting how frustrated Carl was, which is funny because it's not actually a moment, isn't it? It's Ricky recounting something that happened that we didn't hear. But just the idea of that's funny.
Yeah, that's brilliant. My favorite bit is Carl recounting the experience at the disco with his then-girlfriend Zoe Harris. Next week, episode 17. It is the first time Ricky makes a direct reference to the shape of Carl's head. Do not miss it. We'll be back next week in the Carly Pilk Boys pod feed. You can contact us anytime. Really love your emails. Send them through carlypilkboyspod@gmail.com. Follow Zach Mander on TikTok and Instagram, ZACHMANDER. Great place to go find out about the city we live in, Brisbane. Lots of funny videos about Brisbane if you want to check that out. And I'm on Instagram as well, David Ferrier Cartoons. Zach, see you next week.
See you, Dave.
Hi, I don't like moaning anyway, just...